freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about Mike.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Where's like the buff dudes at?
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Yes, and good morning. It is Brock and Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, and the Seattle Sports application on a formal Friday. Let's not forget all of the podcast platforms out there, every single last one of them. You can find us there, I think, and if not, tell Justin, and he'll make sure we're added so that you can get us on your favorite podcast platform.
Don't forget, I'll come to your house and do it there.
We're willing to do pretty much whatever to make it easy for you so that you can find us in whatever way possible, right? You guys are in charge. We're just creating the content, and then we want to make sure that we distribute it directly to you. So, yeah, we'll even come to your house and do a show there. If you can't access any podcasts or anything like that, we'll do it there. I mean, you got to set up like a microphone. Like, you've got to buy all the equipment. But if you buy the equipment, we'll come to your house
and
do a show.
Studio.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought that was just sort of taken for granted. Like, we're not doing it in your living room or something. Like, if you build a soundproof studio and everything else, we'll come to your house. At least I will. Brock probably won't. I'm more of man of the people, kind of, you know, one with the common folk.
That's
right?
True.
And, you know, Brock's kind of an elitist at this point in his life. So I will come to your house. Brock's 50-50. Let's just say that. And, you know, if you have a motorcycle, Justin will chat you up about it for a while. How about that?
Man, you set up a perfect Friday for us.
I hear you have a new motorcycle buddy, by the way. Is that true?
It is true.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I made a little motorcycle friend yesterday.
I know, and I didn't expect it.
Yeah. You never know.
Not going to say anything else about it.
Yeah, all right. I wasn't sure. I just want to let you know that Justin's making new friends, which is certainly great. I had a new friend, which I think I told you guys about a couple weeks ago. My new friend Anand Nanduri, right? I told you about him. He's at Nanduri NFL on Twitter, and he and I kind of became friends over our shared belief in quarterback tiers, right? You may remember him. Oh, now Mora's yawning. Jeez, here we go. I've already bored Mora.
No.
I brought up Anand, my friend, and now Mora's yawning. Yawning in the other room.
It's 6 a.m.
No.
I can't just yawn?
Well, I'm just saying. I thought maybe Anand was boring to you. I'm sorry I talked about Justin's new friend. I haven't mentioned you yet. Good morning, Mora.
I haven't had coffee yet. Don't take it personally.
Good morning, Mora. It's nice to see you.
And it's Friday, so we're all
set. All right. I just want to make sure that I want to try to keep everything interesting for everybody today. So my friend Anand had a little tweet. I don't know if it was late last night or this morning, but I saw it when I woke up this morning. And I thought it was something that was worth starting the show with today, because he tweets, bro. So, by the way, let's just stop there. Any tweet that starts with bro has got to be good, right?
Or really bad.
Well, this one's really good. Bro, they are not messing around at all in Seattle. That was his response to the Seahawks signing Devin Bush late last night. Linebacker, who you may remember, number 10 overall pick. He wore the Merce suit, basically, that looked like his arm is in a sling. It's pretty sweet, actually, when he was in the draft. He's played a few years in Pittsburgh, comes out of Michigan, and Seahawks just signed him to a one-year deal to play linebacker. That, in addition to Evan Brown, who they signed yesterday, a center who is likely to take over that position. That, in addition to the other moves they've made. Oh, and Drew Locke is coming back. The Seahawks are not messing around. I love the sentiment. You think it's true? You think the Seahawks are not messing around?
Yeah, I think it's true.
I hope Absolutely. So. I can't say that Devin Bush and Evan Brown made me feel that way.
I don't know whether Evan Brown does. I don't know enough about Evan Brown to tell you. I like what they're doing. I mean, I like that they went out and found a center. And they're not just going back to Kyle Fuller.
Just the amount of moves and
exactly
and picks.
That sort of helps. Coming. And I got to tell you, here's the thing that was sort of making me think this. Is I don't know whether I want to say this or not. I was getting a little worried that the Seahawks were just going to bring back old friends. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I love the fact that they went out and got Draymond Jones. By the way, he's going to join us at 9 o'clock this morning, about 3 hours from now. I'm told he prefers Dre. So Dre Jones, we'll ask him just to make sure, though. But I'm told he likes Dre, not Draymond. So Dre Jones going to join us at 9 o'clock.
John Schneider confirmed that with Wyman.
Oh, that was confirmed yesterday. Okay, good. Yeah, so Dre will join us at 9 o'clock this morning, and looking forward to talking to him. And I love that move sort of in a vacuum, no matter what. But I was just starting to get a little worried. Like, what if this offseason is Jaron Reed, Bobby Wagner, right? And just like a bunch of old friends. And I'm like, you know, this defense hasn't been very good for a decade. Maybe not quite. Maybe 7 years. And I don't see them going back and bringing in, you know, Cliff Avril and Cam Chancellor and KJ Wright. So the idea of like, yeah, bring back Bobby. I love Bobby. Would I like to see Bobby back here? Sure. As I've said before, like, I'm fine with that. Do I want to see Bobby Wagner as the center point of this defense? Not at this point in his career. They already went down that road, and they decided it wasn't good enough. Yeah, he had a decent year and a good year in L.A. I'm not taking anything away from that. And Bobby is certainly a tackling machine. So, again, no shots fired at Bobby Wagner at all. But I was sort of hoping they would go younger, faster, et cetera. And Devin Bush is that. He brings speed to the equation, which is what Brock told us yesterday. Right. So I like the idea of them going out of their comfort zone and bringing in new players. And in this case, a guy with some real freak show talent. Whether or not he's been able to live up to that, well, that remains to be seen.
I will say his best year was his rookie season. I think he was injured his second season and it's been a little inconsistent since then. But I did not realize he's still only 24.
Dude, he's young. Right. So I like that. Younger, faster, explosive at your linebacking spot. Right. Able to cover down the field. Those are all the things I think you want right now if you're the Seahawks. So are they messing around? I don't know. I don't think they are. I mean, the next question becomes, all right, you've signed Drew Locke. Great. Fine. I kind of like it. But you're now paying your quarterbacks a lot more than you were last year. Drew Locke's getting more than he made and Geno Smith is getting more than he made. So are you really going to go take another quarterback? By all accounts, the answer to that is yes. They are willing, or at least the very least, this doesn't prevent them from drafting another quarterback. Good. It shouldn't. Right? That should absolutely continue to be something that's on their mind and that's open to them. Now, maybe they're just posturing because they want other teams to trade up ahead of them so that they can have their choice of any of those defenders that are available, which would be great too. As I've been saying, Seahawks in the catbird seat, man. They can do whatever they want. You want to draft Hendon Hooker in the second round? Sounds good. You want to draft one of these quarterbacks who comes to you at number 5? Great. You want to take the best available defensive player in that spot? Awesome. They signed a center yesterday. You still want to take a center at number 20 or in the second round? You can do that. You want to use the number 20 pick to trade for an established veteran? I think you can do that too. They really have a lot of different options. And John Schneider yesterday with Wyman and Bob kind of explaining how they've handled the early days of free agency this year.
You know, you're negotiating against other teams. So those guys' markets just, you know, they rise throughout the day. And so, you know, either you're going to sign the guy and go for it or you're not. And, you know, you get to certain levels where you have to dip out. And then, you know, then everybody's markets kind of, you know, tend to, well, then you have players that are, you know, coming out once the cap casualty guys that are coming out, once everybody comes to, once they have to balance their books for the salary cap and you want to still, you know, keep some of your powder dry, as Ted Thompson would say. You want to, you know, save some of your money to be able to negotiate with those guys too. But generally, you know, the longer free agency goes, the markets tend to really by position dictate, you know, what's going on. And so we try to balance that out with what's going on with our team and, you know, what we can afford and what our budget is, you know, how we've identified, you know, certain budget, like per position.
You know, one of the things that always amazes me about John is because he talks in like a lot of directions at once. It's amazing to me how clearly he's able to think and act when it comes to doing his job. Seriously. And I don't, I say that with love. Like, John talks in a lot of ways at once, and Pete too. They both kind of like have a lot of quick changes in the middle of their sentence structure, et cetera. But then when you actually get them doing their job, they are clear focused, know exactly what it is they want. It's an incredible skill, seriously. And John is as good at it as anybody. I like this text that comes in. I think this is very true. By the way, a bunch of people killing Devin Bush, saying he's not fast anymore since his ACL tear. I don't know. We'll see. My guess is if they're going after a 24-year-old linebacker like that, speed is probably part of the package and why they're going there. We'll see. What they're doing, says the 425, and I like this text, is they're putting themselves in position to draft for the best players available instead of need. I think that's a great point. Right? If you didn't have linebackers, then you would need to get them.
Got it.
If you didn't have a quarterback, then you would need to get one. If you didn't have defensive linemen, then you would need to get one. But because you at least have brought in some people to play all those positions, now you can just take the best person available, the best player, whoever you like. And I think that's great. Absolutely agree. Love it. Okay. Tom in Bellingham. Salk, how could you leave out the movie Youngblood in ranking yesterday? You know, I've never actually seen Youngblood. I know of it. Well, we mentioned Youngblood, the band, and then I heard them later in the day, of course.
And the song Youngblood.
Right, but then there's also a movie, Youngblood, which I think is about wrestling, but I've never actually seen it. I've heard of it, and so I'm sorry. Yes,
you're right. From the 80s, Patrick Swayze, yeah. Rob Lowe, you're right.
Yeah, we also left out PYT yesterday, which I thought was kind of a miss. So, yeah, no, I get it. We did leave out a couple things, and I'm sorry about that.
A lot of other
that.
Things going on while we're doing this, too.
Hey, what do you want of our life? And then finally, 253 texting in this morning to say, Salk, if someone makes a soundproof room in their basement, you will willingly come hang out in it? Your survival instincts are terrible.
Yeah, I've kind of been taught not to do that.
Yeah, you know what? Good point.
Did you say basement?
Huh? No, I didn't say, but well, I might have. You know what? Don't worry about it. We're staying in the studio. Build your own soundproof room, whatever. We'll be right back. It's Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, welcome back to Seattle. Drew Locke, John Schneider breaking the news yesterday with Wyman and Bob.
Drew Locke, man. Let's go. Yeah, coming back. He's got it done. Drew Locke, yeah. He's coming back. Yeah.
Breaking news. Yeah. Drew awesome. Locke, is that awesome. Where you were? You were up there finalizing the deal with Drew Locke?
Yes. Just got that.
Very nice. What can you give term? 1 year,
with
2 year?
No.
All right.
No. No. What a great guy, though. I'm really excited. You know,
you really can't give terms, huh?
No, I can't. You'll read about it here, and then it'll be like, $7 million more than it really is.
That's like the most John Schneider thing I've ever heard. In any event, he will be back, and the quarterback room will look very familiar. Both players back for another year. Locke's deal sounds like it's about $4 million with incentives that could bring it up to $7.5 million. Here's my question. Does that mean they wouldn't draft a quarterback at number 5? And I think, obviously, that would be a lot to commit, but the real question on the Drew Locke deal is it guaranteed? Can they get out of this deal before the year begins for just the veteran minimum? Because if so, it doesn't mean anything, right? And I have a hunch that's the case. Just a hunch. I don't know. We haven't seen the deal yet. But when it all comes out, I wonder whether or not we'll find out that they can get out of the Locke deal before the season begins for just the veteran minimum. And if that's the case, then obviously a quarterback is in play. And for whatever it's worth, I've been told that this deal will not prevent them from taking a quarterback in the draft this year. And Schneider says, yeah, they're looking at all the QBs.
And the fifth pick in the draft is, you know, we gotta go see these guys throw in person and see, you know, talk to more coaches, get more questions answered. Yeah, just, you know, trying to figure out the whole, like we talked about last week, like the whole movie, like, you know, we're in, you know, like maybe halfway through the movie right now. How's it going to turn out?
Good stuff from John Schneider yesterday with Wyman and Bob. Seahawks also signed center Evan Brown, who spent the last couple seasons in Detroit. And then late last night, they agreed to bring in linebacker Devin Bush, who's been in Pittsburgh the last couple of years since he was drafted there. He was at one point the number 10 overall pick out of Michigan.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Mariners tie 0-0 yesterday. Not something you see during the regular season, but during spring training, it's not a problem. George Kirby got the start and obviously did not allow a run. We also saw Jared Kelnick doing what Jared Kelnick's been doing.
The windup and the pitch. Jared swinging a line shot. Base hit straightaway center field. Wong to third. He's going to be held up by Manny. The throw in by Slater, the center fielder. And Jared Kelnick just continues to destroy the baseball.
Not just that, but going up the middle, staying within himself, not pulling everything. This is exactly what you've been looking for approach-wise from Jared Kelnick. So great. I believe he also stole second after that single as well. So just so much fun to see him doing what he's been doing. The zero runs yesterday, not necessarily a problem, but the fact that Dylan Moore did not play and was scratched, well, that could be. They're expecting him to play a major role this season against left-handed pitching. They want him at second. They want him at short. They want him as the primary backup at third, especially if Stella doesn't work out. And so, yeah, to see him go out, remember, he had a core injury, and yesterday he was scratched due to some soreness in his side. So that's not exactly what you're looking for. That smells like oblique. And that is not a good sign for the beginning of his season. Biggest issue this team might have is lack of depth in the middle infield. So I would say this is something that is absolutely worth watching. You'll hear from Jerry DePoto coming up here in about 10 minutes.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Man, what a fantastic hockey game last night. Really fun to watch. End-to-end action. No score into the third period. Kraken give up a goal and a penalty shot. Then get it back a few minutes later. Oliver Bjorkstrand doing the damage in an OT. Well, it was Vince Dunn sending him home.
Bjorkstrand for Dunn. He'll step in. Gord's out in front. They score!
Yeah, he was great. Really a good game for the Kraken in general. You know who I really like is that John Hayden, who they brought back up yesterday. Again, fourth line guy, but he gets in front of the net. He's willing to pick a fight. He's willing to pay all the price, do the dirty work. And he's not a bad little offensive player. I am a fan of his, and I would like to see him in that lineup more often. Big win for the Kraken. They needed those 2 points to just keep pace with everybody who just keeps winning in their conference or in their division. NCAA tournament, of course, started yesterday. Your bracket's probably already toast. Number 13 upsetting number 4 Virginia. That ended in a crazy way.
Cedric are the best free throw shooter. Clark in a straight jacket. He didn't need to do that.
What's so funny about basketball announcing is that you don't need to say much. Like in football announcing, it's caught, it's intercepted, right? Like you yell the words of what happened. In baseball, you get home run or play at the plate, he's safe or whatever the case may be. Hockey, you get shot, score! Basketball, you just get, like guys just losing their mind yelling.
That's a good point.
Anyway, pretty exciting day. Later, number 15 Princeton pulling off their own big upset. They defeat Arizona 59-55. After they blew a 10-point lead in the second half. Only 2.6% of brackets for ESPN had both Furman and Princeton winning. So, yeah, that's a bit of a shock for everybody. That's everything you need to know. Has anybody checked on Curtis Rogers yet today? Have we heard anything from C. Raj? Did he make it through the day yesterday?
We're just trying to give him some space.
Okay. Yeah, I think he just needs time.
Our resident Arizona alum.
Yeah.
Not doing well. Because he wears it on his sleeve, too, right? I mean, there's a lot of bear down garbage and
he
all
was
that.
In full Arizona gear yesterday.
Yeah, that's tough, man. You never want to see it, but apparently that's how it goes. Tough break. You know, I had Arizona going deeper, and then I realized that I had watched 30 seconds of college basketball this year. And during that time, Arizona State beat him at the buzzer. And I was like, well, obviously, they're not very good. So I took them off. I think I still had them winning yesterday, but yeah, I kind of...
Yeah,
I knew enough not to get them too deep in this tournament because that was literally the only thing I knew.
Well, you're a college basketball expert.
Well, what can I tell you? I'm an Arizona aficionado, obviously, based on my college basketball viewing habits this year. All right. Great stuff from Jerry DePoto. We had a really good deep dive on the WBC, what they've liked, what they haven't, and what this team will look like. So come take a listen next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Morning, Jerry.
Morning, guys. I can't help but pull off of the cricket thing. I'm into cricket.
Are you? Of course you are.
But I know very little about cricket, but I do know that from a sports analytics and, you know, athlete care and management systems perspective, cricket is shockingly advanced as an industry. And I've had a chance to meet a couple of people from the UK who are closely associated with cricket. And it's amazing, you know, when you learn what different sports federations do worldwide to help their athletes improve, is the best way to put it.
You ever tried to play?
Never. And, you know, I've watched some cricket games actually down here in Arizona while I was living here. There were a community of cricket players that would play during youth baseball games, you know, out in the far yonder. And I thought, hey, how are they doing that? And then but you could probably say the same when you watch somebody try to hit, you know, Jacob DeGrom slide.
Mm-hmm. You've been watching the WBC?
A little bit, you know, in passing, mostly just what's happening with our guys.
Yeah, did you get a chance to watch it all last night with Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic?
Watched some of the game coming and going, and then obviously, you know, watched the highlights and lowlights afterwards. So some real disappointing moments in that game for for a number of people, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's sad, man. Seeing that, first of all, the games have been great. Brock and I were just talking about how much we've enjoyed watching it, and it sounds like the players have really enjoyed it. It's cool to see some of the electricity of playoff baseball, not quite the same, but some of the electricity of a game that matters to the guys, but without the pressure necessarily of having to come back to fans that are furious because they've waited all season for something to happen, and then, you know, they get let down. So it's kind of fun to see the guys just kind of lay it all out without, you know, necessarily that same backlash effect.
Yeah, I think the thing I like best about WBC is watching the two things. One is watching how the different, you know, maybe smaller baseball communities or, you know, countries that are fledgling in baseball as a, I mean, even as a sport, you know, Czechoslovakia, Great Britain, watching how, you know, the various federations and fan bases react and, you know, how excited they get is really cool. And then I think the tournament itself is really set up to four Cinderellas. And, you know, it seems like each year that WBC has been played, the team that should win or one of the teams that should win usually wins. And, you know, but along the way, there are awesome storylines and Cinderella stories that pop up that become more human interest, you know, the electrician sign, you know, striking out Shohei. And I joked the other day, we should sign the electrician and just run him out there every now and then just to see if we can rattle the cage.
Well, what you should do is sign Juan Diego Montes. I don't know if you've seen this guy for Nicaragua, but he's got an elite mustache. It goes at least 3-4 inches on either side of his mouth and then turns up at the top. He also crashed into a wall, made a great play in center field, and we saw him work a tremendous at bat late in the game. So I don't know if you need any help scouting, but Juan Diego Montes might be on your list.
There you go. I'll definitely put it on the personnel list and pass it along to the fellas.
I'm horrified to tell you that I've actually already made the suggestion to certain members of your staff. So I'm sad that it didn't make its way up to you. So it's like, hey, are we going to get this going or what? All right, let's talk about maybe the best story Mariner-wise of the WBC, and that's Harry Ford. I compared it a little bit to what Julio did at the Olympics a few years ago. How important is it to see Harry Ford having success at that stage?
You know, I think it's awesome. And it's really, you're bringing out a little bit of Harry's personality. You know, he is such a mature kid and a gifted player. And I think you're seeing that as well. I think the youngest player to homer twice in the WBC. And, you know, he's such an explosive athlete and thrilled that he's part of our organization. But like we were talking about a moment ago with some of these, you know, fledgling baseball federations or, you know, programs that are just getting off the ground, baseball is not a thing in the UK until very recently. And for them to have a young player that they can really latch on to through the WBC who perform well in a real pool of competition. I mean, the group that's over at Chase Field has been, you know, it's a very talented group of players. And, you know, I love that Harry had success, that he handled it as well as he did in terms of interacting with social media, the interviews that he did. He looks like a seasoned pro, and he's 20 years old, which I'm thrilled for him and for us.
Do you think he'll be called Sir Harry Ford when he comes back to the clubhouse at all? I don't know if you saw the little kid in that classroom that reacted to his home runs, kind of like the classroom reacted to Cal Raleigh's. But do you think Sir Harry has a catch to it?
Not only is there a catch to it, I am certain that this will be part of his identity moving forward in Marinerdom. And I'm also certain that it's not going to go away. He will be Sir Harry in the clubhouse and around those places more than a little bit.
Hey, anything else jumped out individually with all of your guys that played over there? Matt Brash in a couple leverage situations, Julio's at bats, what he's done in the outfield. Is there anything in their time away that, as you said earlier to us, that you've been watching in passing, but certainly watching your guys individually? Anything else that jumps out from their performances over the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, you hit on Brash. Brash had an outstanding outing. His second outing for Team Canada was about as good a single inning as you can throw. And, you know, dynamic stuff, precision. I think he threw 10 pitches, 9 strikes, and they were all somewhere between 98 and 100 miles an hour with a nasty slider. you know, he was a standout in his brief tournament. We mentioned Harry, who really, you know, kind of grabbed some international attention, which is, again, an exciting thing for a young player. Julio always grabs attention. You know, he did some big things. He did some things to get noticed. He's been on those stages before, which is insane to say for a 22-year-old who's just really getting started. But his star is shining as bright as anybody's. Really thrilled with where Diego Castillo's at. And we saw it here, you know, before he left for WBC, and, you know, particularly his first outing for Team Dominican was excellent. And then, you know, the pitch qualities that we're seeing from Diego, from Matt Festa, from Matt Brash, you know, all, you know, very encouraging in terms of what we're getting back. And really, you know, Gino, Gino is the metronome. He's like quietly productive. And when you look up, you're going to get the 3-for-4 with a homer. You're going to get the 1-for-3 with an RBI to right. He's just such a pro. And, you know, I'm thrilled for he and the Venezuelan team that they get to move on. And, you know, I'm even more thrilled that the rest of our players are coming home.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. I mean, you have to be happy to get those guys back. And, you know, obviously you have a personal relationship with Edwin Diaz, having, you know, been with him here in Seattle, and all the success that he started his career with here. You know, what did you think as you saw that happen last night?
You know, pain, you know, almost shed a tear for him. And hopefully it's nothing more than just a something acting up in a moment, but you can't help but feel pained for him. Edwin is a wonderful human being, great kid, super energy. He's, you know, he's the best in the industry at what he does. I hope he's okay. And I guess at the end of the day, I'd rather have it be something below the waist than above if it's a pitcher. But he is, you know, he's such an electric talent. The game's better when he's healthy and pitching in it, and I hope he is.
Hey, just to bring things back around here to Seattle, we heard this week that J.P. Crawford was dealing with kind of a soggy shoulder. Any update on how J.P. is doing?
Yeah, you know, his shoulder is less soggy than it was before. he's been able to DH. He's going through his morning routines. You know, we don't anticipate it's going to be a very long layoff, and really no concern long term. Feel like, you know, while he might not play shortstop today, there's to say it would be shortstop tomorrow or in the very near term is probably an accurate way to put it.
That's great news and good to hear. As I was trying to figure out with Crawford, what is your ideal hitting profile for him, if that makes sense? I mean, what kind of hitter do you guys want JP to be?
You know, a manager of the strike zone. And that's what JP does. He does so many things that are subtle and go unseen. And, you know, what's the ideal? The ideal for any player is to hit the 100th, you know, percentile outcome of what their skill level suggests they're capable of. And, you know, JP is capable of running an on-base average above the league average, which he's consistently done. Make good swing decisions, high contact, you know, keep the strikeouts low, draw an above average walk rate, two things that he does. We see the best place for JP is near the bottom of the order, you know, effectively creating traffic as the lineup turns itself around. And, you know, he's been working his way through his career to figure out where he fits in the 1-9 mechanism, because he is an on-base guy. There's some appeal in the leadoff spot. There's also an appeal in having that near the bottom of the order. You know, we don't anticipate or expect JP to go out and hit 25 homers. I think JP goes out and he hits you his 270, his 280. He gets on base, you know, above league average and plays good shortstop. You know, and whatever he gives you in terms of slug is a bonus. But, you know, the rest, he can hit. He's got a good swing. He uses the field. He takes his walks. And at the end of the day, like you've seen to this point in his Mariners career, you know, it typically adds up to about a league average offensive player with a little different profile than, say, a Julio Rodriguez or a Gino Suarez.
You know, I'm curious, Jerry, it was nice to bump into you and Scott with my youngest, Titus. And Scott gave Titus some good recommendation to not be too caught up in velo at a young age. And, you know, Ty loves to pitch and do all of that. And everybody wants velocity. And he said, you know, we have a gas camp where we're still teaching, you know, our major league prospects how to throw harder. It's at that time that you start to really concern. I'm curious. I don't think I've ever asked you this or really even seen a study done around this, but is there a comparison between improving a pitcher's velo and improving a hitter's exit velo? Because I know these hard hit rates, you know, have come into play, and you can look at these hard hit rates and how important that is, maybe in your park in particular, and in April and May and June, to hit the ball hard. Is there a comparison between those two?
There definitely is. And you know, first of all, I have, having had a chance to meet Titus, and my guess is Titus is going to throw hard regardless as he continues to grow. But big physical athletic kid. And, you know, I think the as it relates to exit velocities and pitchers' velocities, you know, we do have a gas camp. It's not entirely about teaching pitchers to throw harder, though there are some pitchers who have that as part of their player plan. And, you know, the goal is that the more you can elevate velocity in a pitcher's profile with all of his pitches, you know, the fastball will drag the slider, the changeup with it. And as velocity goes higher on the continuum, the value of that pitch or the potential impact of that pitch also goes higher. And, you know, and for, I guess, for all intents and purposes, harder isn't always better, but harder with precision is always better. And, you know, if you can repeat those things, the same is true of a hitter with his swing. And some of the ways that, you know, modern baseball, and this isn't just the Mariners, but we are invested in programs like these, we're working on trying to create the hitter's optimal swing path. You know, we talked about it to a degree in the offseason, things that they do at places like Cressy Sports and Driveline. We're doing biomechanical assessments of the hitter, how the hitter's body moves, the perfect swing plane is just different. It looks different than it did 20 years ago because we just have better science now than we did then. And, you know, and add to that now, while we're talking about adding EV, you know, we're also making, you know, real adjustments to the bats that our players use. And, you know, right now all the rage in Major League Baseball is individual bat fitting and trying to fit a player with a bat that will allow him to execute the most efficient swing he can. And the intent is to generate higher exit velocities and a cleaner swing path because they're all linked.
Which is got to be what? Kind of like a golf club fitting? I mean, sort of the same idea?
Exactly right. You know, and I think that I was never a good enough golfer to actually go for a fitting, but, you know, now I regret it. Maybe I would have been better.
Maybe that was the secret. That's the only thing you were missing. To talk a little bit about roster construction, as you guys are getting closer to needing to make some decisions here, a couple weeks away from the start of the regular season. Yeah, how about that? What's the advantage to carrying a third catcher, given especially the two catchers that you're likely to start off with?
Well, you know, I think for sure, all things being equal and all players being healthy, it's, you know, Cal Raleigh and Tom Murphy are going to break camp on our club. And, you know, they will get the reps behind home plate in 99% of the circumstances based on the general layout now. That said, you know, and I will specifically speak to Cooper Hummel, who has been one of the most impressive players we've had in camp this year. He's been a great story, acquired him over the offseason. He's got a super approach, switch hitter. He's got power from both sides, hits the ball hard. He runs well, and he happens to catch. You know, he has a multi-position profile. He plays the outfield. He has played some infield, second base, even some third base, but primarily a catcher and outfielder. And what that allows you to do if he winds up making our club, and right now he's put himself in position to be a heavy consideration. If that happens, you either have Cooper as a potential DH, as a potential move around the field guy who has the ability to match up against either hand pitcher, you know, the left or the right. It also allows you to use Cal Raleigh or Tom Murphy on a given day as a DH when the other is catching. And, you know, why that is an advantage, because as we know, Cal's also a switch hitter who is an above average offensive player against both handed pitchers. And Tom Murphy is effectively like having another AJ Pollock against left hand pitching. He is, you know, Tom has a fantastic history against lefties. And, you know, that gives us a real way to weaponize all of the players in our lineup in a way that brings out their best traits and allows them the best chance for success. So it's definitely a consideration for us. The wonky thing becomes, you know, how to manage with those bench roles. You need to have backup at a variety of positions defensively. And, you know, that's where it becomes a little bit more, I guess, abstract. But just for sheer lineup balance and what it could do 1 through 9 in our lineup, there's a very strong case to be made that the third catcher is one of the smartest things we could do.
How much of a role do these final 2 weeks play in making some of these decisions with roster construction, bullpen, fifth or sixth starter, how all of that looks? Are there still decisions to be made that these final 2 weeks will play a role with?
Sure. You know, most of it, and this is just being honest, most of it is going to be relative to player health. You know, we came in with the most stable roster that we've had in my time with the Mariners. We had a pretty good idea of what our opening day roster would look like, which is to say, coming into camp, you know, 23 or 24 of the positions were generally in pen or very dark pencil. So we had an idea of what our roster would look like. We have had some guys that have really jumped up and grabbed attention. And you know, that's the fun part of spring training. And over these last couple of weeks, if those players continue to do the things that they've done, it certainly results in some more difficult conversations. But so much of our team is made up of players who are coming off of outstanding seasons from a year ago. And, you know, so many of the role players on our club, like a Dylan Moore, like a Sam Haggerty, like virtually all of the Bomberos down in the bullpen, there's very hard to justify not giving those players the opportunity to go do what they did a year ago. So, you know, that will affect our decision as well. But by and large, it's been a lot more arrow up type players in this spring than arrow down. And we're excited to have to make tough decisions on the last days.
What are you most excited about right now?
Most excited about, really excited that we're getting minor league games started today, you know, where we can see if roughly any hour of the day, we can walk outside and see a game with great players. That excites me. Really excited, you know, and I'm going to knock on something here, but really excited about our pitching depth. It has been, you know, really the highlight of our spring has been the evolution of our pitching depth, where, you know, from the starting rotation to the bullpen, from the major league staff, you know, on through the top two levels, really, of the minor leagues. We feel like this is the deepest, most talented group of pitchers that we've ever had. And frankly, that's what we're hearing from teams around us, you know, when we are in the ballpark, when teams come to visit, and the arms come running out of our bullpen. That's been a super refreshing thing that you can't help but be excited about.
I guess on the other side of that, what are you most nervous or worried about today?
You know, the 2 weeks that have to, you know, go away between now and opening day and what could go wrong there, you know, in terms of, it's mostly just keeping players healthy. And right now we've been very fortunate, like we were in 2022, you know, 2022, we had some, you know, some position players banged up. We were very fortunate in regard to pitcher health and you know, right now, knock on wood, we've been pretty fortunate here. It's, you know, our pitchers have thrown the ball very well and generally have shown up healthy every day. Our position players, we've had some small dings and general aches and pains as we get used to playing regularly again after the off season, but nothing, you know, nothing dramatic. And I guess if I had to cross my fingers for one thing is that, you know, we're able to avoid that drama for another couple of weeks at least.
You got to run. We got to run here, Jerry, in about a minute or so. Any favorite pitch, new pitch yet? Logan's been throwing that splitter a little bit. Is there any and all of the new pitches that came to camp, is there any that's standing out individually?
Yeah, I Logan's split is a real thing. And, you know, it was never more evident than in his last outing day before yesterday. And you know, he's throwing that split 86, 88 miles an hour. It's got real vertical drop. And couldn't be more impressed with how much you put into it. And you know, it's you could see, and again, it's a spring training setting, but you know, his fastball is 95 to 97, you know, the other day. And that split is coming in, you know, something in the neighborhood of 10 miles an hour below his fastball, and just drops off the plane. And Logan has great fastball extension and carry. And if he has a weapon that creates that kind of vertical strike zone, that has a chance to really change his profile as well. So that's been by far the most exciting of what has been an exciting group of pitch development.
That's really cool. And just seeing from Shannon, who's going to join us here in about a half hour, that Dylan Moore is going to play a game today. He's going to play shortstop, which is awesome. You were talking a little bit about health. That's great to see. You got a couple guys back in camp today. Harry Ford is back. Matt Brash is
Sir
back.
Sir Harry.
I'm sorry. Sir Harry. My daughter asked me if that was short for Harrison, so I don't know what's going on there. But hey, Jerry, we appreciate it. Go find a good cricket game to watch, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys.
All right, there you go. That is Jerry DePoto, who joins us Thursdays at 8:30. Every Thursday is GM day here, at least for the next couple of weeks leading up to the draft. As Jerry DePoto joins us, at 8:30.
You're making fun of Pete and John for the way they talk, and here you are.
I'm just hiccuping or something. I don't know what's going on. I promise I haven't been drinking, at least not that I know of, unless somebody spiked my tea. Yeah, that's true. Man, I'll tell you what, St. Patrick's Day coming on Friday of the tournament is the best.
Yes, it is.
God, I got some good memories from earlier in early 20s. Of some Fridays of the tournament that are also St. Patrick's Day, not going to work and finding some other things to do instead. That's a pretty good combo right there.
It is.
Especially because you
have some
annoying
memories of serving people like you on St. Patrick's
I'm sure.
Day.
But St. Patrick's Day is one of those, it's one of those amateur hour days, right? Yep. Don't you think?
Totally. Well, the restaurant I worked at was next door to an Irish bar, so we got all the overflow.
Ugh. The people who wanted to do St. Patrick's Day but couldn't even make it to the bar to do it right, that's a very low class.
Also, car bombs make the most disgusting messes. There's just like sticky, like Guinness and Bailey's cream everywhere all night.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy tonight.
Don't be that guy. Do whatever you can to not be that guy. But there was a bar near our house that would do green beer, and so that was always pretty fun combo with the tournament. So, yeah. All right, good stuff. Brock's going to be in here in just a minute. The Seahawks have been incredibly busy. They just keep signing guys. Three more yesterday. We'll get his thoughts on what they're doing and what they're going to do next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.